You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Hope you're having a great Christmas, and thanks for spending your afternoon with us. We're rebroadcasting some of our favorite interviews from the last 6 months, and we've already heard about taking great pictures, a renaissance in board gaming in the United States, and the life and legacy of Johnny Cash.
Now we turn our attention towards an iconic toy that may have turned up under your Christmas tree this year. Lego has been around for a long time, but the company has had its ups and downs. A few months back, we talked to David Robertson about the company and its iconic blocks. David is the co-author of Brick by Brick, how Lego rewrote the rules of innovation and conquered the global toy industry. I started the interview by asking him just how popular Lego is these days.
Well, it got toy of the century at the end of the, at around 2000. They're pumping out, I think they pumped out about 80 bricks per person for every man, woman, and child in the world. They're doing tremendously well. They're growing like crazy right now. It seems like everybody has some story about Lego that they tell.
And there's Lego conventions all around the world, aren't there, even for adults?
That's right, led by adults, and separate from the company itself. Groups of fans get together to show off their creations. If you haven't been to one, it's really an impressive experience.
Now, you talk a lot about how Legos are a child's toy that doesn't get relegated to the back of the closet after a couple of weeks. Why is that? What is special about Legos?
Well, what I really study is the management of innovation. And so the reason I wrote the book is, I mean, I have the same memories of the brand as it sounds like you two do. And also from my kids too, watching them play with Lego. But what I was really interested in, with the book was that Lego manages innovation really well. And one of the first decisions that they made, was that they decided that they would make a system of play, not a set of toys. And what that means is that if you buy a box of Legos, then you get a certain play experience, but then if you buy another set and another set, as you add sets, you multiply the possibilities. And I think that was a pretty powerful insight, and that has really helped Lego expand over the years. And of course, the fact that you can buy a set today and it snaps together with the bricks that, you know, maybe you bought in the 60s or 70s is pretty incredible.
Well, so it's a system of play that can keep building on itself. You can start with the kits, but then from there on you can tear them apart and build something completely new, which parents love. And it's been a winning business model for Lego, but not always. And that's where your book comes in. So tell me how Lego first had its ascendance and then, I guess, its first fall.
So Lego started out as a carpentry shop in 1932, and a guy named Ole Kirk Christensen was making toys because he couldn't get enough wood to make furniture. He invested in a injection molding machine, a plastic molding machine in 1947, started making plastic toys. His son took over the business and patented the brick in 1958. They continued expanding the business, you know, slowly and steadily. The grandson of the founder, a guy named Kjell Kirk Christensen, took over the company in the late 70s. And he introduced a couple of pretty major innovations. One was technique, the more sophisticated Lego with beams and pins and gears and motors. The idea being that kids would leave the brick at around age 10 or so. And he thought if you make a more sophisticated set, then teenagers would play with it. For the most part, that failed. But there was a group of 25 to 55-year-old men that loved it and continued to play with it. The other thing that he did that I think is even more important is the minifigure. The minifigure first came out in 1978, those little Lego people. And I think that's a pretty important innovation in Lego's history because it really personalized the play experience. I played with Lego before the minifigure. So, you know, I just made houses and cars and things like that. When you have the minifigure, it really becomes a much more immersive experience. You can play out roles and conflicts and stories. And I think that combined with the sets that he put them in, Kjell Kirk's Lego put out these space and castle sets, these fantasy sets, which had never existed before, launched Lego into a 15-year growth period where it doubled in size every 5 years for 15 years. But then in the mid-90s, the growth stopped. It plateaued. And what had happened is that they'd reached a kind of natural endpoint. They'd expanded into North America. They'd come out with lots of different sets, but there's only so many feet of shelf space in so many toy stores around the world. And so sales flattened. But they kept putting out more and more toys, trying to get that sales growth back. And so the costs were going up, but the sales weren't. So they suffered a big loss in 1998, had to lay off 1,000 people. And the grandson of the founder, who'd been running the company for 20 years, stepped aside and brought in a turnaround expert, a guy named Paul Plowman. And Plowman, he went out and he looked at the market and he saw that, you know, kids were moving away from traditional toys, not just Lego, but Hot Wheels and Lincoln Logs and Barbies. And also the distribution channel, the Toys R Us and the Walmarts were getting much more sophisticated about, you know, why kids bought what they did and much more powerful. And thirdly, all the patents that Lego had on the brick had expired, so anybody could make a Lego brick for cheaper. And Lego was making them in high-cost Denmark, whereas everybody else was making their toys in China. So other toys were getting cheaper. And so this was a recipe for a lousy industry.
So it sounds like, you know, Lego did what a lot of good companies would do in that scenario. They thought, we're going to innovate the heck out of this problem. We're going to do everything we can to find uncharted territory, go there. We're going to branch out. What happened?
Yeah, they did. And they experimented, and they had a couple of hits. They were really convinced that the brick was passé, that kids just didn't want to play with plastic bricks anymore. And so they challenged their designers to come up with just whole new play experiences. You know, some consulting firms pointed to Lego as a case study of what you should do if your industry is dying. And so they did. They experimented. And what happened is they ended up getting themselves into a lot of businesses they didn't understand. They made toys that were confusing to the market. I mean, if you see a Lego toy on the shelf and you look at it and it doesn't have much building as part of it, you know, parents would get confused and they'd walk away. And then they also ended up with some toys that just weren't that good. There was one toy called Galador, which had this TV show that went along with it that they commissioned from a Hollywood producer. And it had a video game, and it had the story behind it and electronics and so forth. And I looked it up, and nobody who acted in the TV show ever acted in anything ever again. I mean, it was so bad. And the toy
failed.
Career
killer, huh?
And there was no building as part of the toy. I mean, you could take the arms off and you could insert the arms into the head socket or, you know, I mean, but there was nothing Lego-y about it. It was a mammoth investment and a terrible failure. And so there was a couple years of experimentation, and there's a couple things that worked. I mean, 1999 was the first Lego Star Wars set, which was very successful. Lego Harry Potter, there's a toy called Bionicle. There's a couple experiments that were pretty good that worked. But the problem was there's lots more that weren't Lego-y, that weren't popular, and that weren't profitable. And Lego kind of the problem was not that they couldn't boost innovation, it's that they boosted it too much and lost track and lost control of what was happening.
Yeah, it's interesting that they lost their faith in the plastic brick. That's kind of the core of their company. It sounds like they sort of got away from the heart and soul of who they were.
Yeah, and you know what's surprising about it is that what they've learned since then is that if kids play with those online games, like there's a whole series of games about Lego Star Wars, Lego Indiana Jones, Lego Batman, and if kids play with those, they actually want more Legos, not less. That there's nothing disruptive about it, to use a buzzword. So what happened was when they did all that experimentation, it worked for a while, but some of the big toys like Lego Star Wars and Lego Harry Potter were only big in years in which there was a movie. So there was a Star Wars movie in 99 and 2002. There was a Harry Potter movie in 2001 and 2002. There was no movie from either franchise in 2003 or 2004, the first half of 2004. And so sales of those two big toys fell off a cliff, and Lego was left with a lot of unprofitable, unpopular products, and they almost went out of business. 2003, they were really close to bankruptcy.
That's David Robertson, co-author of the book Brick by Brick, How Lego Rewrote the Rules of Innovation and Conquered the Global Toy Industry. We've got the second half of that interview coming up in a few minutes. And if you got any Legos for Christmas, maybe a fire station or a Death Star or maybe some random bricks, Tell us about it. We're taking your comments on the Central Time Facebook page, and while you're there, post a picture of your Lego creation.
Later in the program, we will revisit our interview with Dr. Richard Gunderman, who wrote about Americans living longer, but not necessarily better. He says we need to focus more on the quality of our years and not the quantity. He has some thoughts on what constitutes a life well lived.
That's all coming up on Central Time. Right now, here's a look at some of the latest news.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We're talking now with David Robertson. He's the author of the book Brick by Brick, How Lego Rewrote the Rules of Innovation and Conquered the Global Toy Industry. And we're hoping to get your take on this, too. Why do you think Lego is special if you're a parent? Is there something special about the way Lego helps your kids to play that you value? And we'll also be curious, what's the coolest thing that you or your children ever built with Legos? You can reach us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. And David, we left with that cliffhanger. Lego was in the dump. Their profits had dipped off. What happened? How did they get out of that dump? Because I know there's a crazy chart in your book where all of a sudden you're seeing a whole lot of black. What happened to bring them back?
Well, what they did is they realized that all this out-of-the-box thinking, all this innovation almost put them out of business. And what they did is they went back to the brick. They went back in the box. And what they found was there was a lot of money in the box, that they'd been so focused on coming up with those great big innovations that they'd forgot about the little innovations, the police stations and the fire trucks that kids and parents loved. And when they went back in the box and when they started developing those kind of incrementally better versions of spaceships and fire trucks and police stations, they found that kids loved them and parents loved them, and they came back to the brand. But within that, there was also a lot of other things that they did to make it work better. One of the things that happened during the experimentation period between 1999 and 2002 is that they let designers create whatever shapes and use whatever colors they wanted for the bricks and the toys they produced. And so the complexity got out of control. What they did is they cut that way down, and they forced the designers to work with a much more limited palette of shapes and colors. And that way they can make sure that those pieces were reused in lots of different sets. They're made in higher volume, and so they cost much less to produce. And they also narrowed what designers could do. You know, if you were a designer in 2001, you were told to create a great play experience. You know, the sky's the limit. Come up with something never seen before. Now, if you're a designer at Lego, you might be told to create a great, you know, fire truck or police station, and to do it in a very limited period of time with a limited palette of pieces, and also, you know, a very clear deadline. And that is a different kind of innovation, a different kind of creativity. You know, there's a lot of creativity involved in making something like that great. But some of the designers from 2001 were really unhappy and left the company. But others, you know, who told me that in a way we had to rediscover what Lego was all about. How do you take this limited set of pieces and reconfigure them in an interesting way and make something really great? And the other part that's rewarding about being in Lego now is that if they work on a toy, they're pretty sure it's going to get in the hands of a kid and, you know, be played with. Whereas before, a lot of those ideas never made it to market.
Well, it's an incredible story. Well, let's get our callers in on this. We've got Jim, who's joining us from Eau Claire. Hi, Jim.
Hi there. You know, this is great. I could talk Legos all day. I have a story. When I told you, screener as a child, it taught me many skills of just organization and following the steps that were laid out, you know, process and thinking and critical thinking on it. But one time I put together a helicopter following the steps, and I got stuck. My mother would not assist me. I slammed it on the floor. It shattered. I run off, tantrum, come back a couple hours later after cooling down, tore it back apart, started from scratch, and finished my project. But I use it nowadays as a sense of, you know, you just don't give up on something. You continue on until the project's done. And like I said, I think it's probably one of the best. I had toys in the toolbox to play with. To give them a sense on a rainy day or even a nice day outside. You can take them to your sandbox or anywhere.
Yeah, I love that story, Jim. I, too, have been present at these Lego tantrums and comebacks, so I know what you're talking about there. And, David, does that resonate with you about part of what's so cool about Legos?
Oh, I think it is the spatial reasoning, the creative construction experience. I think, you know, Lego is a great investment in your kids' ability to support you when you're older.
That's important. I mean, there was actually, you know, an interesting article in the New York Times. I just glanced at the headline today, though, that said a child's spatial ability is linked to creativity. And it seems like Legos help that spatial ability in spades.
Oh, very much so. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Jim. And we move to Anne in Muskego. Hi, Anne.
Hello.
Hi. What's your experience with Legos?
Hi. Well, just from a parent's point of view, they're the best things that were ever invented. My son, who's 25 now, started with the basic Lego set, and I watched him make buildings and vehicles, and everything was symmetrical. So, you know, he was very detail-oriented about how he put things together. And then as he got older, he wanted the kits that had the smaller pieces, the Star Wars vehicles, things like that, which he spent hours, you know, working on. So I watched him do that and was amazed at how he could put those things together. Also, my memories, too, are of stepping on them in the carpet. Thinking, oh, what was that? And, you know, vacuuming up the little pieces and things like that.
Nothing hurts like a Lego, does it?
I know, those sharp corners. But, yeah, I can't say enough good things about Legos and how they teach children how to, you know, all their reasoning and skills and things like that.
So. All right. Well, thank you so much for that experience that you had, Anne. What do you think, David?
Well, you know, what I teach and what I study is innovation management, and specifically governance, you know, corporate governance of innovation. And that's a topic that if you start talking about it from that perspective, executives' eyes will glaze over and, you know, you'll lose their attention pretty quickly. But if instead of that, you can talk about how do you set up a system for innovation management in a company that gives teams the space to create, but also the direction they need to deliver, you know, the type of innovation that's going to be profitable and targeted to the markets you want to serve. But if you talk about it in terms of Lego toys, all of a sudden these kind of cynical 40-something executives, you know, turn into kids again, and they start, you know, getting playful about it. And when people act that way, they learn better. And so it's this Lego book is really a way for me to sneakily talk about some pretty important issues about corporate governance without it seeming that way.
Well, thank you so much, Anne. And another call here. We go to Paul in Mequon. Hi, Paul.
Good afternoon. This actually brings up some great memories of childhood. As a young boy, boys, as you know, like to break things and wreck things. And we, my best friend and I made up a game called Demolition Derby Legos. And we would make tars out of them and crash them into each other. And the last one with the wheel on or wheel standing was the winner. So I actually still do that to this day with my own children. And as I shared with your screener, I love Legos, but the worst part of them is, now that I'm a father myself, is stepping on them. They hurt like heck.
I think we can all agree on that, along with their virtues, for sure. All right, well, thanks so much for that, Paul. Demolition Derby with Legos. Yeah, there's so much creativity. And, David, you were talking about how Legos are kind of a sneaky way to talk about, you know, some business management stuff. What are the lessons here for other businesses about how to get the job done?
Well, I think that there's a lot of books out there that talk about how to boost innovation and how to come up with the big ideas that are going to change your industry. I think Lego's kind of a cautionary tale. It's more about how you can boost innovation too far. You can lose control of innovation, and it can almost put you out of business. What you have to do is not just boost innovation, but also focus and direct it. And that's a hard balance to do, but Lego has done it well. I mean, the punchline of the whole story is Lego's performance over the last couple of years. For the last 5 years, the company's been growing sales at 24% per year, every year for the past 5 years, and profits at 40% per year, every year for the last 5 years. And that's because of their ability to manage innovation.
Do you think they get their due when it comes to companies that get acknowledgement in the media?
I don't. You know, I found five different most innovative companies lists, and Lego wasn't on any of them. They're not in the top 50 in any list of most innovative companies that I could find. So it's this great kind of untold story. You know, they're stuck off in Billund, Denmark, and there's really 3 hours of nothing in every direction from Billund. You know, people in Copenhagen think of Billund as out of touch with Copenhagen.
Oh, interesting. Well, I want to get your take on a Facebook comment quickly here. We're nearing the end of our time together, but Lee on Facebook writes, as a school teacher, I got to relive this engineering exploration by building Lego Mindstorms kits. My students have made programmable robots, rovers, sorting machines, and self-balancing Segways. It strikes me that the future of science and engineering will be taught on Legos. What do you think? Is that possible?
The Mindstorms kit is an amazingly sophisticated robotics kit masquerading as a Lego toy. It's I also did Mindstorms with my kids, and it's really impressive that that Lego could come out with such a sophisticated but usable toy. And there's a nice chapter in the book about how they're able to involve their fan community. There's a number of adults who get involved with this in the development of the kit. And what they found, actually, is there's this buzzword called the wisdom of the crowd. The crowd almost became a mob, and they almost lost control of them. And what they found is that actually the wisdom of the clique, getting a couple of fans more intimately involved, was what really works, and then steadily over time expanding that. And they're doing that in lots of other different ways throughout the company now.
And David, did you build some cool stuff while you were researching this book?
You know, those adult fans of Lego who spend so much time with it, I used to kind of make fun of them, but now I've become one.
Awesome. I
looked around, and my kids have all left Lego, and I'm the only one left in the house that still plays with it.
Well, maybe you'll have to send us a picture of what you made. David, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
David Robertson is the author of Brick by Brick, How Lego Rewrote the Rules of Innovation and Conquered the Global Toy Industry.
You're listening to the best of Central Time here on the Ideas Network. We're back with you live tomorrow, and so is Joy Cardine. After 6 tomorrow morning, Joy and her guest will talk customer service do's and don'ts, leading into the biggest return day of the year at stores. She'll welcome your stories, good and bad.
Then after 7, they'll discuss some of the best movies of the past year and talk about which flicks could win big at this year's Academy Awards.
And after 8, they'll celebrate a century of crossword puzzles with author and public radio personality Richard Lederer.
That's coming up tomorrow morning on the Ideas Network.
After the news, we'll revisit an interview with Dr. Richard Gunderman. He points out that Americans are living longer, but not necessarily better. He wants us to shift our focus to living better and more fulfilling lives. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.